This sound file contains the spoken word version of a Wikipedia article on George W. Bush. It is recorded by user S. Whistler, and the material was recorded on the 18th of May, 2012. George W. Bush, from Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia, at en.wikipedia.org. George W. Bush. George Walker Bush, born July 6, 1946, is an American politician who served as the 43rd President of the United States from 2001 to 2009 and the 46th Governor of Texas from 1995 to 2000. Bush was born in New Haven, Connecticut. He is the eldest son of Barbara Bush and the 41st President, George H.W. Bush, making him the second American president to have been the son of a former president. He is also the brother of Jeb Bush, former governor of Florida. After graduating from Yale University in 1968 and Harvard Business School in 1975, Bush worked in oil businesses. He married Laura Welch in 1977 and ran unsuccessfully for the House of Representatives shortly thereafter. He later co-owned the Texas Rangers baseball team before defeating Ann Richards in the 1994 Texas gubernatorial election. In a close and controversial election, Bush was elected president in 2000 as the Republican candidate, defeating Vice President Al Gore in the Electoral College. Early on, the Bush administration withdrew from a number of international treaty processes, notably the Kyoto Protocol on global warming. A series of terrorist attacks occurred 8 months into Bush's first term as president on September 11, 2001. In response, Bush announced the War on Terror, an international military campaign which included the war in Afghanistan, launched in 2001, and the war in Iraq, launched in 2003. In addition to national security issues, Bush promoted policies on the economy, healthcare, education, and social security reform. He signed into law broad tax cuts, the Patriot Act, and No Child Left Behind Act, the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act, and Medicare prescription drug benefits for seniors. His tenure saw national debates on immigration, social security, electronic surveillance, and enhanced interrogation techniques. Bush successfully ran for re-election against Democratic Senator John Kerry in 2004, in another relatively close election. After his re-election, Bush received increasingly heated criticism from the political spectrum. In 2005, the Bush administration dealt with widespread criticism over its handling of Hurricane Katrina. Following this and other controversies, as well as the growing unpopularity of the Iraq War, Democrats won control of Congress in the 2006 elections. In December 2007, the United States entered its longest post-World War II recession, prompting the Bush administration to enact multiple economic programs intended to preserve the country's financial system. Though Bush was popular in the U.S. for much of his first term, his popularity declines sharply during his second. He was a highly controversial figure internationally, with public protests occurring even during visits to close allies, such as the United Kingdom. After leaving office, Bush returned to Texas and purchased a home in a suburban area of Dallas. He is currently a public speaker and has written a book about his life, entitled Decision Points. Contents. 1. Childhood to midlife. 2. Marriage, family, and personal life. 3. Early career. 4. Governor of Texas. 5. Presidential campaigns. 6. Presidency. 7. Post-presidency. Childhood to midlife. George Walker Bush was born in New Haven, Connecticut, at Grace New Haven Hospital, now Yale New Haven Hospital, on July 6, 1946, the first child of George H.W. Bush and Barbara Bush, née Pierce. He was raised in Midland and Houston, Texas, with four siblings, Jeb, Neil, Marvin, and Dorothy. Another younger sister, Robin, died from leukemia at the age of three in 1953. Bush's grandfather, Prescott Bush, was a U.S. senator from Connecticut. Bush's father, George H.W. Bush, was vice president from 1981 to 1989 and president from 1989 to 1993. Bush is primarily of English descent and also more distant German, Dutch, Welsh, Irish, French, and Scottish ancestry. Education. Bush attended public schools in Midland, Texas, until the family moved to Houston after he completed 7th grade. He then went to the Kincaid School, a prep school in Houston, for 2 years. Bush finished high school at Phillips Academy, a boarding school, then all-male, in Andover, Massachusetts, where he played baseball and during his senior year was the head cheerleader. Bush attended Yale University from 1964 to 1968, graduating with an AB in history. During this time, he was a member of Delta Kappa Epsilon, being elected the fraternity's president during his senior year. Bush also became a member of the Skull and Bone Society as a senior. Bush was a keen rugby player and was on Yale's first 15. He characterized himself as an average student. His average during his first 3 years at Yale was 77, and he had a similar average under a non-numeric rating system in his final year. Beginning in the fall of 1973, Bush attended the Harvard Business School, where he earned a Master of Business Administration. He is the only U.S. president to have earned an MBA. Texas Air National Guard. In May 1968, Bush was commissioned to the Texas Air National Guard. After 2 years of active duty service while training, he was assigned to Houston, flying Convair F-102s with 147th Reconnaissance Wing out of Ellington Field Joint Reserve Base. Critics, including former Democratic National Committee Chairman Terry McAuliffe, have alleged that Bush was favorably treated due to his father's political standing, citing his selection as a pilot despite his low pilot aptitude test scores and his irregular attendance. In June 2005, the United States Department of Defense released all the records of Bush's Texas Air National Guard service, which remain in its official archives. In late 1972 and early 1973, he drilled with the 187th Fighter Wing of the Alabama Air National Guard, having moved to Montgomery, Alabama, to work on the unsuccessful U.S. Senate campaign of Republican Winton M. Blount. In 1972, Bush was suspended from flying for failure to take a scheduled physical exam. He was honorably discharged from the Air Force Reserve on November the 21st, 1974. Marriage, family, and personal life. At a backyard barbecue in 1977, friends introduced him to Laura Welch, a schoolteacher and librarian. Bush proposed to her after a 3-month courtship, and they married on November 5th of that year. The couple settled in Midland, Texas. Bush left his family's Episcopal Church to join his wife's United Methodist Church. In 1981, Laura Bush gave birth to fraternal twin daughters, Jenna and Barbara. They graduated from high school in 2000 and from the University of Texas at Austin and Yale University, respectively, in 2004. Prior to his marriage, Bush had multiple episodes of alcohol abuse. In one instance, on September 4, 1976, he was arrested near his family's summer home in Kennebunkport, Maine, for driving under the influence of alcohol. He pleaded guilty, was fined $150, and his Maine driver's license suspended until 1978. Bush's alleged drug usage is less clear. When asked about past illicit drug use, Bush has consistently refused to answer. He defended his refusal to answer in a publicized casual conversation with a friend, saying that he feared a bad example for the younger generation. Bush says that his wife has had a stabilizing effect on his life, and attributes to her influence his 1986 decision to give up alcohol. While governor of Texas, Bush said of his wife, "I saw an elegant, beautiful woman who turned out not only to be elegant and beautiful, but very smart and willing to put up with my rough edges, and I must confess, has smoothed them off over time." Bush mostly reads serious historical non-fiction for pleasure. During his time as president, Bush read 14 Lincoln biographies and, during the last 3 years of his presidency, he reportedly read 186 books. A reporter recalls seeing books by John Fowles, F. Scott Fitzgerald, James Joyce, and Gore Vidal lying about, as well as biographies of Willa Cather and Queen Victoria in his home when Bush was a Texas oil man. Other hobbies include cigar smoking and golf. Early life. In 1978, Bush ran for the House of Representatives, from Texas's 19th congressional district. His opponent, Kent Hance, portrayed him as out of touch with rural Texans. Bush lost by 6,000 votes, 6% of the 103,000 votes cast. He returned to the oil industry and began a series of small, independent oil exploration companies. He created Arbusto Energy and later changed the name to Bush Exploration. In 1984, his company merged with the larger Spectrum 7 and Bush became chairman. The company was hurt by decreased oil prices and it folded into HKN Inc. Bush served on the board of directors for HKN. Questions of possible insider trading involving HKN arose, but the Securities and Exchange Commission's SEC investigation concluded that the information Bush had at the time of his stock sale were not sufficient to constitute insider trading. Bush moved his family to Washington, D.C. in 1988 to work on his father's campaign for the U.S. presidency. He served as a campaign advisor and liaison to the media. He assisted his father by campaigning across the country. Returning to Texas after the successful campaign, he purchased a share in the Texas Rangers baseball franchise in April 1989, where he served as managing general partner for 5 years. He actively led the team's projects and regularly attended its games, often choosing to sit in the open stands with fans. Bush's sale of his shares in the Rangers in 1998 brought him over $15 million from his initial $800,000 investment. In December 1991, Bush was one of 7 people named by his father to run his father's 1992 presidential re-election campaign as campaign advisor. The prior month, his father asked him to tell White House Chief of Staff John H. Sununu that he should resign. Governor of Texas. As Bush's brother, Jeb, sought the governorship of Florida, Bush declared his candidacy for the 1994 Texas gubernatorial election. His campaign focused on 4 themes: welfare reform, tort reform, crime reduction, and education improvement. Bush's campaign advisors were Karen Hughes, Joe Albor, and Karl Rove. After easily winning the Republican primary, Bush faced popular Democratic incumbent Governor Ann Richards. In the course of the campaign, Bush pledged to sign a bill allowing Texans to obtain permits to carry concealed weapons. Richards had vetoed the bill, but Bush signed it after he became governor. According to the Atlantic Monthly, the race featured a rumor that she was a lesbian, along with a rare instance of such a tactic making it into the public record, when a regional chairman of the Bush campaign allowed himself, perhaps inadvertently, to be quoted criticizing Richards for appointing avowed homosexual activists to state jobs. The Atlantic, and others, connected the lesbian rumor to Karl Rove, but Rove denied being involved. Bush won the election with 53.5% against Richards' 45.9%. Bush used a budget surplus to push through Texas's largest tax cut, $2 billion. He extended government funding for organizations providing education of the dangers of alcohol and drug use and abuse, and helping to reduce domestic violence. Critics contended that during his tenure, Texas ranked near the bottom in environmental evaluations, but supporters pointed to his efforts to raise the salaries of teachers and improved educational test scores. In 1999, Bush also helped make Texas eventually the leading producer of wind-powered electricity in the U.S. by signing a state law obliging electric retailers to buy a certain amount of energy from renewable sources, RPS. In 1998, Bush won re-election with a record 69% of the vote. He became the first governor in Texas history to be elected to 2 consecutive 4-year terms. For most of Texas history, governors served 2-year terms. A constitutional amendment extended those terms to 4 years, starting in 1975. In his second term, Bush promoted faith-based organizations and enjoyed high approval ratings. He proclaimed June 10, 2000, to be Jesus Day in Texas, a day on which he urged all Texans to answer the call to serve those in need. Throughout Bush's first term, national attention focused on him as a potential future presidential candidate. Following his re-election, speculation soared. Within a year, he decided to seek the 2000 Republican presidential nomination. Presidential campaigns. 2000 presidential candidacy. Primary. In June 1999, while governor of Texas, Bush announced his candidacy for the President of the United States. With no incumbents running, Bush entered a large field of candidates for the Republican Party presidential nomination, consisting of John McCain, Alan Keyes, Steve Forbes, Gary Bauer, Orrin Hatch, Elizabeth Dole, Dan Quayle, Pat Buchanan, Lamar Alexander, John Kasich, and Robert C. Smith. Bush portrayed himself as a compassionate conservative, implying he was more centrist than other Republicans. He campaigned on a platform that included increasing the size of the United States armed forces, cutting taxes, improving education, and aiding minorities. By early 2000, the race had centered on Bush and McCain. Bush won the Iowa caucuses, but although he was heavily favored to win the New Hampshire primary, he trailed McCain by 19% and lost that primary. Despite this, Bush regained momentum and, according to political observers, effectively became the front-runner after the South Carolina primary, which, according to the Boston Globe, made history for the campaign's negativity. The New York Times described it as a smear campaign. General election. On July the 25th, 2000, Bush surprised some observers by asking Dick Cheney, a former White House Chief of Staff, U.S. Representative, and Secretary of Defense, to be his running mate. Cheney was then serving as head of Bush's Vice Presidential Search Committee. Soon after, Cheney was officially nominated by the Republican Party at the 2000 Republican National Convention. Bush continued to campaign across the country and tooted his record as governor of Texas. Bush's campaign criticized his Democratic opponent, incumbent Vice President Al Gore, over gun control and taxation. When the election returns came in on November the 7th, Bush won 29 states, including Florida. The closeness of the Florida outcome led to a recount. The initial recount also went to Bush, but the outcome was tied up in courts for a month until reaching the U.S. Supreme Court. On December 9th, in a controversial ruling, the Bush v. Gore case in the court reversed a Florida Supreme Court decision ordering a third count and stopped an ordered statewide hand recount based on the argument that the use of different standards among Florida's counties violated the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. The machine recount showed that Bush had won Florida by a margin of 537 votes out of 6 million cast. Although he received 543,895 fewer individual votes than Gore nationwide, Bush won the election, receiving 271 electoral votes to Gore's 266. 2004 presidential candidacy. In 2004, Bush commanded broad support in the Republican Party and did not encounter a primary challenge. He appointed Ken Mellman as campaign manager with a political strategy devised by Karl Rove. Bush and the Republican platform included a strong commitment to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Support. Bush and the Republican platform included a strong commitment to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, support for the U.S. Patriot Act, a renewed shift in policy for constitutional amendments banning abortion and same-sex marriage, reforming Social Security to create private investment accounts, creation of an ownership society, and opposing mandatory carbon emission controls. Bush also called for the implementation of a guest worker program for immigrants, which was criticized by conservatives. The Bush campaign advertised across the U.S. against Democratic candidates, including Bush's emerging opponent, Massachusetts Senator John Kerry. Kerry and other Democrats attacked Bush on the Iraq War and accused him of failing to stimulate the economy and job growth. The Bush campaign portrayed Kerry as a staunch liberal who would raise taxes and increase the size of government. The Bush campaign continuously criticized Kerry's seemingly contradictory statements on the war in Iraq and argued that Kerry lacked the decisiveness and vision necessary for success in the war on terror. In the election, Bush carried 31 of 50 states, receiving a total of 286 electoral votes. He won an outright majority of the popular vote, 50.7% to his opponent's 48.3%. The previous president to win an outright majority of the popular vote was Bush's father in the 1988 election. Additionally, it was the first time since Herbert Hoover's election in 1928 that a Republican president was elected alongside re-elected Republican majorities in both houses of Congress. Bush's 2.5% margin of victory was the narrowest ever for a victorious incumbent president, breaking Woodrow Wilson's 3.1% margin of victory against Charlie Evans Hughes in the election of 1916. Presidency. Bush was sworn in as president on January 20, 2001. Though he originally outlined an ambitious domestic agenda, his priorities were significantly altered following the September 11 terrorist attacks in 2001. Wars were waged in Afghanistan and later Iraq, while significant debates regarding immigration, healthcare, social security, economic policy, and treatment of terrorist detainees took place within the United States. Over an eight-year period, Bush's once-high approval ratings steadily declined throughout his presidency, while his disapproval numbers increased significantly over the same time frame. During 2007, the United States entered the longest post-World War II recession, and the administration responded by enacting multiple economic programs. Domestic policy. Main article, see Domestic Policy of the George W. Bush Administration. Economic policy. During the George W. Bush administration, federal government spending was increased from $1,789 billion to $2,983 billion, 70%, but the revenues were only increased from $2,025 billion to $2,524 billion, from 2000 to 2008. Individual income tax revenues were increased by 14%, corporate tax revenues by 50%, customs and duties by 40%, discretionary domestic spending by 62%, Medicare spending by 131%, Social Security by 51%, and income security spending by 130%. Cyclically adjusted, revenues rose by 35% and spending by 65%. Also, proportionally, Bush increased government spending more than any predecessor since Lyndon B. Johnson. The number of economic regulation governmental workers was increased by 91,196, whereas Bill Clinton had cut down the number by 969. In a February 28, 2001 message to the Congress, Bush estimated that there would be a $5.6 trillion surplus over the next 10 years. Facing congressional opposition, Bush held town hall-style public meetings across the U.S. in 2001, to increase public support for his plan for a $1.35 trillion tax cut program, one of the largest tax cuts in U.S. history. Bush argued that unspent government funds should be returned to taxpayers, saying, "The surplus is not the government's money, the surplus is the people's money." With reports of the threat of recession from the Federal Reserve Chairman, Alan Greenspan, Bush argued that such a tax cut would stimulate the economy and create jobs. Others, including the Treasury Secretary at the time, Paul O'Neill, were opposed to some of the tax cuts on the basis that they would contribute to budget deficits and undermine Social Security. O'Neill disputes the claim made in Bush's book, Decision Points, that he never openly disagreed with him on planned tax cuts. By 2003, the economy showed signs of improvement, though job growth remained stagnant. Another tax cut program was passed that year. Under the Bush administration, real GDP grew at an average annual rate of 2.5%, considerably below the average for business cycles from 1949 to 2000. Bush ended office with the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 10,587, and the average peaked in October 2007 at over 14,000. When Bush left office, the average was 7,949, one of the lowest levels of his presidency. Unemployment originally rose from 4.2% in January 2001 to 6.3% in June 2003, but subsequently dropped to 4.5% as of July 2007. Adjusted for inflation, median household income dropped by $1,175 between 2000 and 2007, while Professor Ken Homer of Georgetown University has noted that, after-tax median household income increased by 2%. The poverty rate increased from 11.3% in 2000 to 12.3% in 2006, after peaking at 12.7% in 2004. By October 2008, due to increases in domestic and foreign spending, the national debt had risen to $11.3 trillion, an increase of over 100% from the start of the year 2000, when the debt was $5.6 trillion. Most debt was accumulated as a result of what became known as the Bush tax cuts and increasing national security spending. By the end of Bush's presidency, unemployment climbed to 7.2%. The perception of Bush's effect on the economy is significantly affected by partisanship, which makes it difficult to determine who or what caused the problems. In December 2007, the United States entered the longest post-World War II recession, which included a housing market correction, a subprime mortgage crisis, soaring oil prices, and a declining dollar value. In February, 63,000 jobs were lost, a five-year record. To aid with the situation, Bush signed a $170 billion economic stimulus package, which was intended to improve the economic situation by sending tax rebate checks to many Americans and providing tax breaks for struggling businesses. The Bush administration pushed for significantly increased regulation of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in 2003, and, after 2 years, the regulations passed the House but died in the Senate. Many Republican senators, as well as influential members of the Bush administration, feared that the agency created by these regulations would merely be mimicking the private sector's risky practices. In September 2008, the crisis became much more serious, beginning with the government takeover of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, followed by the collapse of Lehman Brothers and a federal bailout of American International Group for $85 billion. Many economists and world governments determined that the situation became the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. Additionally, regulation over the housing market would have been beneficial, according to former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan. Bush, meanwhile, proposed a financial rescue package to buy back a large portion of the U.S. mortgage market. Vince Reinhardt, a former Federal Reserve economist, now at the American Enterprise Institute, said, "It would have helped for the Bush administration to empower the folks at Treasury and the Federal Reserve and the Comptroller of the Currency and the FDIC to look at these issues more closely, and, additionally, that it would have helped for Congress to have held hearings." In November 2008, over 500,000 jobs were lost, which marked the largest loss of jobs in the United States in 34 years. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that in the last 4 months of 2008, 1.9 million jobs were lost. By the end of 2008, the U.S. had lost 2.6 million jobs. Education and health. Bush undertook a number of educational priorities, such as increasing the funding for the National Science Foundation and National Institutes of Health in his first years of office, and creating education programs to strengthen the grounding in science and mathematics for American high school students. Funding for the NIH was cut in 2006, the first such cut in 36 years, due to rising inflation. One of the administration's early major initiatives was the No Child Left Behind Act, which aimed to measure and close the gap between rich and poor student performance, provide options to parents with students in low-performing schools, and target more federal funding to low-income schools. This landmark education initiative passed with broad bipartisan support, including that of Senator Ted Kennedy of Massachusetts. It was signed into law by Bush in early 2002. Many contend that the initiative has been successful, as cited by the fact that students in the U.S. have performed significantly better on state reading and math tests since Bush signed No Child Left Behind into law. Critics argue that it is underfunded, and the NCLBA's focus on high-stakes testing and quantitative outcomes is counterproductive. After being re-elected, Bush signed into law a Medicare drug benefit program that, according to Jan Crawford Greenberg, resulted in the greatest expansion of America's welfare state in 40 years. The bill's costs approached $7 trillion. In 2007, Bush opposed and vetoed State Children's Health Insurance Program, SCHIP, legislation. In 2007, Bush opposed and vetoed State Children's Health Insurance Program legislation, which was added by the Democrats onto a war funding bill and passed by Congress. The SCHIP legislation would have significantly expanded federally funded healthcare benefits and plans to children of some low-income families from about 6 million to 10 million children. It was to be funded by an increase in the cigarette tax. Bush viewed the legislation as a move towards socialized healthcare and asserted that the program could benefit families making as much as $83,000 per year who did not need the help. Social services and Social Security. Following Republican efforts to pass the Medicare Act of 2003, Bush signed the bill, which included major changes to the Medicare program by providing beneficiaries with some assistance in paying for prescription drugs while relying on private insurance for the delivery of benefits. The Retired Persons Lobby Group, AARP, worked with the Bush administration on the program and gave their endorsement. Bush said that the law, estimated to cost $400 billion over the first 10 years, would give the elderly better choices and more control over their health care. Bush began his second term by outlining a major initiative to reform Social Security, which was facing record deficit projections beginning in 2005. Bush made it the centerpiece of his domestic agenda, despite opposition from some in the U.S. Congress. In his 2005 State of the Union address, Bush discussed the potential impending bankruptcy of the program and outlined his new program, which included partial privatization of the system, personal Social Security accounts, and options to permit Americans to divert a portion of their Social Security tax, FICA, into secured investments. Democrats opposed the proposal to partially privatize the system. Bush embarked on a 60-day national tour, campaigning vigorously for his initiative in media events, known as the Conversations on Social Security, in an attempt to gain support from the general public. Despite the energetic campaign, public support for the proposal declined, and the House Republican leadership decided not to put Social Security reform on the priority list for the remainder of their 2005 legislative agenda. The proposal's legislative prospects were further diminished by the political fallout from the Hurricane Katrina in the fall of 2005. After the Democrats gained control of both houses of the Congress as a result of the 2006 midterm elections, the prospects of any further congressional action on the Bush proposal were dead for the remainder of his term in office. Environmental and energy policies. Upon taking office in 2001, Bush stated his opposition to the Kyoto Protocol, an amendment to the UN Convention on Climate Change, which seeks to impose mandatory targets for reducing greenhouse gas emissions, citing that the treaty exempted 80% of the world's population and would have cost tens of billions of dollars per year. He also cited that the Senate had voted 95-0 in 1997 on a resolution expressing its disapproval of the protocol. In May 2001, Bush signed an executive order to create an interagency task force to streamline energy projects and later signed two other executive orders to tackle environmental issues. In 2002, Bush announced the Clear Skies Act of 2003, aimed at amending the Clean Air Act to reduce air pollution through the use of emissions trading programs. Many experts argued that the legislation would have weakened the original legislation by allowing higher emission rates of pollutants than were previously legal. The initiative was introduced to Congress but failed to make it out of committee. Bush has said that he believes that global warming is real and has noted that it is a serious problem, but he asserted that there is debate over whether it's man-made or naturally caused. The Bush administration's stance on global warming remained controversial in the scientific and environmental communities. Critics have alleged that the administration misinformed the public and did not do enough to reduce carbon emissions and deter global warming. In his 2006 State of the Union address, Bush declared, "America is addicted to oil," and announced his Advanced Energy Initiative to increase energy development research. In the same year, Bush declared the northwestern Hawaiian Islands a national monument, creating the largest marine reserve to date. Papahanaumokuakea Marine National Monument comprises 84 million acres, 34,000 square kilometers, and is home to 7,000 species of fish, birds, and other marine animals, many of which are specific only to those islands. The move was hailed by conservationists for its foresight and leadership in protecting this incredible area. In his 2007 State of the Union address, Bush renewed his pledge to work toward diminished reliance on foreign oil by reducing fossil fuel consumption and increasing alternative fuel production. Amid high gasoline prices in 2008, Bush lifted a ban on offshore drilling. However, the move was largely symbolic, as there is still a federal law banning offshore drilling. Bush said, "This means that the only thing standing between the American people and these vast oil reserves is action from the U.S. Congress." Bush had said in June 2008, "In the long run, the solution is to reduce demand for oil by promoting alternative energy technologies. My administration has worked with Congress to invest in gas-saving technologies like advanced batteries and hydrogen fuel cells. In the short run, we'll continue to rely largely on oil, and that means we need to increase supply, especially here at home. So my administration has repeatedly called on Congress to expand domestic oil production." In his 2008 State of the Union address, Bush announced that the U.S. would commit $2 billion over the next 3 years to a new international fund to promote clean energy technologies and fight climate change, saying, "Along with contributions from other countries, this fund will increase and accelerate the deployment of all forms of cleaner, more efficient technologies in developing nations like India and China, and help leverage substantial private sector capital by making clean energy projects more financially attractive." He also announced plans to reaffirm the United States' commitment to work with major economies and, through the UN, to complete an international agreement that will slow, stop, and eventually reverse the growth of greenhouse gases. He stated, "This agreement will be effective only if it includes commitments by every major economy and gives none a free ride." Stem cell research and first use of veto power. Federal funding for medical research involving the creation or destruction of human embryos through the Department of Health and Human Services and the National Institute of Health has been forbidden by law since the passage in 1995 of the Dick Wicker Amendment by Congress and the signature of President Bill Clinton. Bush has said that he supports adult stem cell research and has supported federal legislation that finances adult stem cell research. However, Bush did not support embryonic stem cell research. On the 9th of August 2001, Bush signed an executive order lifting the ban on federal funding for the 71 existing lines of stem cells, but the ability of these existing lines to provide an adequate medium for testing has been questioned. Testing can only be done on 12 of the original lines, and all of the approved lines have been cultivated in contact with mouse cells, which create safety issues that complicate development and approval of therapies from these lines. On July 19, 2006, Bush used his veto power for the first time in his presidency to veto the Stem Cell Research Enhancement Act. The bill would have repealed the Dickey-Wicker Amendment, thereby permitting federal money to be used for research where stem cells are derived from the destruction of an embryo. Immigration. In 2006, Bush urged Congress to move more than 12 million illegal immigrants to work in the United States with the creation of a temporary guest worker program. Bush did not support amnesty for illegal immigrants, but argued that the lack of legal status denies the protections of U.S. laws to millions of people who face dangers of poverty and exploitation, and penalizes employers despite a demand for immigrant labor. Nearly 8 million immigrants came to the United States from 2000 to 2005, more than any other five-year period in the nation's history. Almost half entered illegally. Bush also urged Congress to provide additional funds for border security and committed to deploying 6,000 National Guard troops to the Mexico-United States border. In May to June 2007, Bush strongly supported the Comprehensive Immigration Reform Act of 2007, which was written by a bipartisan group of senators with the active participation of the Bush administration. The bill envisaged a legalization process for illegal immigrants, with an eventual path to citizenship, establishing a guest worker program, a series of border and worksite enforcement measures, a reform of the green card application process, and the introduction of a point-based merit system for green cards, elimination of chain migration and the diversity immigrant visa, and other measures. Bush contended that the proposed bill did not amount to amnesty. A heated public debate followed, which resulted in a substantial rift within the Republican Party. The majority of conservatives were opposed to it because of its legalization or amnesty provisions. The bill was eventually defeated in the Senate on the 28th of June 2007, when a cloture motion failed on a 46-53 vote. Bush expressed disappointment over the defeat of one of his signature domestic initiatives. The Bush administration later proposed a series of immigration enforcement measures that do not require a change in law. On September 19, 2010, former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert said the Bush administration offered to accept 100,000 Palestinian refugees as American citizens if a permanent settlement had been reached between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. Hurricane Katrina. Hurricane Katrina, which was one of the worst natural disasters in U.S. history, struck early in Bush's second term. Katrina formed in late August during the 2005 Atlantic hurricane season and devastated much of the north-central Gulf Coast of the United States, particularly New Orleans. Bush declared a state of emergency in Louisiana on the 27th of August and in Mississippi and Alabama the following day. He authorized the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, and Federal Emergency Management System, FEMA, to manage the disaster. But his announcement failed to spur these agencies into action. The eye of the hurricane made landfall on August the 29th, and New Orleans began to flood due to levee breaches. Later that day, Bush declared that a major disaster existed in Louisiana, officially authorizing FEMA to start using federal funds to assist in the recovery effort. On August the 30th, DHS Secretary Michael Chertoff declared it an incident of national significance, triggering the first use of the newly created National Response Plan. 3 days later, on September the 2nd, National Guard troops first entered the city of New Orleans. The same day, Bush toured parts of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama and declared the success of the recovery effort up to that point was not enough. As the disaster in New Orleans intensified, critics charged that Bush was misrepresenting his administration's role in what they saw as a flawed response. Leaders attacked Bush for having appointed apparently incompetent leaders to positions of power at FEMA, notably Michael D. Brown. It was also argued that federal response was limited as a result of the Iraq War, and Bush himself did not act upon warnings of floods. Bush responded to mounting criticisms by accepting full responsibility for the federal government's failures in its handling of the emergency. It has been argued that with Katrina, Bush passed a political tipping point from which he would not recover. Midterm dismissal of U.S. attorneys. During Bush's second term, a controversy arose over the Justice Department's midterm dismissal of 7 United States attorneys. The White House maintained that the U.S. attorneys were fired for poor performance. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez would later resign over the issue, along with other senior members of the Justice Department. The House Judiciary Committee issued subpoenas for Harriet Myers and Josh Bolton to testify regarding this matter, but Bush directed Myers and Bolton to not comply with those subpoenas, invoking his right of executive privilege. Bush has maintained that all of his advisers are protected under a broad executive privilege protection to receive candid advice. The Justice Department has determined that the President's order was legal. Although congressional investigations have focused on whether the Justice Department and the White House were using the U.S. attorney positions for political advantage, no official findings have been released. On March 10, 2008, the Congress filed a federal lawsuit to enforce their issued subpoenas. On July 31, 2008, a United States District Court judge ruled that Bush's top advisers were not immune from congressional subpoenas. In August 2009, Karl Rove and Harriet Myers testified before the House Judiciary Committee. A Justice Department inquiry into the firing of U.S. attorneys concluded that political considerations played a part in as many as 4 of the dismissals. In July 2010, the Justice Department prosecutors closed the 2-year investigation without filing charges after determining that the firings were inappropriately political, but not criminal. According to the prosecutors, evidence did not demonstrate that any prosecutable criminal offense was committed with regard to the removal of David Iglesias. The investigative team also determined that the evidence did not warrant expanding the scope of the investigation beyond the removal of Iglesias. Foreign policy. In July 2001, Bush visited the Pope at Castel Gandolfo. During his presidential campaign, Bush's foreign policy platform included support for a stronger economic and political relationship with Latin America, especially Mexico, and a reduction of involvement in nation-building and other small-scale military engagements. The administration pursued a national missile defense. Bush was an advocate of China's entry into the World Trade Organization. He said free trade was a force for democratization in China. After the September 11th attacks, Bush launched the War on Terror, in which the United States military and an international coalition invaded Afghanistan. In 2003, Bush launched the invasion of Iraq, which he described as being part of the War on Terrorism. Those invasions led to the toppling of the Taliban regime in Afghanistan and the removal of Saddam Hussein from power in Iraq, as well as the deaths of many Iraqis, with surveys indicating between 400,000 to over 1 million dead, excluding the tens of thousands of civilians in Afghanistan. Bush began his second term with an emphasis on improving strained relations with European nations. He appointed longtime advisor Karen Hughes to oversee a global public relations campaign. Bush lauded the pro-democracy struggles in Georgia and Ukraine. In March 2006, a visit to India led to renewed ties between the two countries, reversing decades of U.S. policy. The visit particularly focused on areas of nuclear energy and counterterrorism cooperation, discussions that would eventually lead to the U.S.-India civil nuclear agreement. This is in stark contrast to the stance taken by his predecessor, Clinton, whose approach and response to India after the 1998 nuclear tests was that of sanctions and hectoring. The relationship between India and the United States was one that dramatically improved during Bush's tenure. Midway through Bush's second term, it was questioned whether Bush was retreating from his freedom and democracy agenda, highlighted in policy changes towards some oil-rich former Soviet republics in Central Asia. In an address before both houses of Congress on September 20, 2001, Bush thanked the nations of the world for their support following the September 11th attacks. He specifically thanked British Prime Minister Tony Blair for traveling to Washington to show unity of purpose with America, and said America has no truer friend than Great Britain. September 11th, 2001. The September 11th terrorist attacks were a major turning point in Bush's presidency. That evening, he addressed the nation from the Oval Office, promising a strong response to the attacks, but emphasizing the need for the nation to come together and comfort the families of the victims. On September 14th, he visited Ground Zero, meeting with Mayor Rudy Giuliani, firefighters, police officers, and volunteers. Bush addressed the gathering via a megaphone, while standing on a heap of rubble. To much applause, I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you, and the people who knocked those buildings down will hear all of us soon. In a September 20th speech, Bush condemned Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda and issued an ultimatum to the Taliban regime in Afghanistan, where bin Laden was operating, to hand over the terrorists or share in their fate. War on Terrorism. After September the 11th, Bush announced a global war on terror. The Afghan Taliban regime was not forthcoming with Osama bin Laden, so Bush ordered the invasion of Afghanistan to overthrow the Taliban regime. In his January 29, 2002 State of the Union address, he asserted that an axis of evil consisting of North Korea, Iran, and Iraq was arming to threaten the peace of the world and posed a grave and growing danger. The Bush administration proceeded to assert a right and intention to engage in preemptive war, also called preventative war, in response to perceived threats. This would form a basis for what became known as the Bush Doctrine. The broader war on terror allegations of an axis of evil, and in particular the doctrine of preemptive war, began to weaken the unprecedented levels of international and domestic support for Bush and United States action against al-Qaeda following the September the 11th attacks. Some national leaders alleged abuse by U.S. troops and called for the U.S. to shut down the Guantanamo Bay detention camp and other such facilities. Dissent from and criticism of Bush's leadership in the war on terror increased as the war in Iraq expanded. In 2006, a national intelligence estimate expressed the combined opinion of the United States' own intelligence agencies, concluding that the Iraq War had become the cor célèbre for jihadists and the jihad movement, and that the jihad movement was growing. Afghanistan. On October 7, 2001, U.S. and British forces initiated bombing campaigns that led to the arrival of Northern Alliance troops in Kabul on November 13. The main goals of the war were to defeat the Taliban, drive al-Qaeda out of Afghanistan, and capture key al-Qaeda leaders. In December 2001, the Pentagon reported that the Taliban had been defeated, but cautioned that the war would go on, continuing weakening Taliban and al-Qaeda leaders. Later that month, the UN had installed the Afghan Transitional Administration, chaired by Hamid Karzai. Efforts to kill or capture al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden failed as he escaped a battle in December 2001 in the mountainous region of Tora Bora, which the Bush administration later acknowledged to have resulted from a failure to commit enough U.S. ground troops. On March 13, 2002, Bush stated that "I am not too concerned about him," when asked about bin Laden, brushing him off as a person who has now been marginalized, despite declaring that he was wanted dead or alive shortly after 9/11, and statements from U.S. commanders that bin Laden was still a threat in the new Afghanistan. It was not until May 2011, 2 years after Bush left office, that bin Laden was killed by U.S. forces. Bin Laden's successor, Ayman al-Zawahiri, as well as the leader of the Taliban, Mohammed Omar, remain at large. Despite the initial success in driving the Taliban from power in Kabul, by early 2003, the Taliban was regrouping, amassing new funds and recruits. In 2006, the Taliban insurgency appeared larger, fiercer, and better organized than expected, with large-scale allied offensive, such as Operation Mountain Thrust, attaining limited success. As a result, Bush commissioned 3,500 additional troops to the country in March 2007. Iraq. Beginning with his January 29, 2002 State of the Union address, Bush began publicly focusing attention on Iraq, which he labeled as part of an axis of evil allied with terrorists and posing a grave and growing danger to U.S. interests through possession of weapons of mass destruction. In the latter half of 2002, CIA reports contained assertions of Saddam Hussein's intent of reconstituting nuclear weapons programs, not properly accounting for Iraqi biological and chemical weapons, and that some Iraqi missiles had a range greater than allowed by UN sanctions. Contentions that the Bush administration manipulated or exaggerated the threat and evidence of Iraq's weapons of mass destruction capabilities would eventually become a major point of criticism for the president. In late 2002 and early 2003, Bush urged the United Nations to enforce Iraqi disarmament mandates, precipitating a diplomatic crisis. In November 2002, Hans Blix and Mohammed El-Baradei led UN weapons inspectors in Iraq, but were advised by the US to depart the country for 4 days prior to the US invasion, despite their requests for more time to complete their tasks. The US initially sought a UN Security Council resolution authorizing the use of military force, but dropped the bid for UN approval due to vigorous opposition from several countries. More than 20 nations, most notably the United Kingdom, designated the Coalition of the Willing, joined the United States in invading Iraq. They launched the invasion on the 20th of March 2003. The Iraqi military was quickly defeated. The capital, Baghdad, fell on April 9, 2003. On the 1st of May, Bush declared the end of major combat operations in Iraq. The initial success of US operations increased his popularity, but the US and allied forces faced a growing insurgency led by sectarian groups. Bush's mission accomplished speech was later criticized as premature. From 2004 until 2007, the situation in Iraq deteriorated further, with some observers arguing that there was a full-scale civil war in Iraq. Bush's policies met with criticism, including demands domestically to set a timetable to withdraw troops from Iraq. The 2006 report of the bipartisan Iraq Study Group, led by James Baker, concluded that the situation in Iraq was grave and deteriorating. While Bush admitted that there were strategic mistakes made in regards to the stability of Iraq, he maintained he would not change the overall Iraq strategy. In 2005, free democratic elections were held in Iraq for the first time in 50 years. According to Iraqi National Security Advisor Mowafaq al-Rabai, this is the greatest day in the history of this country. Bush praised the event as well, saying that the Iraqis have taken rightful control of their country's destiny. This led to the election of Jalal Talabani as president and Nouri al-Maliki as prime minister of Iraq. A referendum to approve a constitution in Iraq was held in October 2005, supported by the majority Shiites and many Kurds. On January 10, 2007, Bush addressed the nation regarding the situation in Iraq. In this speech, he announced a surge of 21,500 more troops for Iraq, as well as a job program for Iraqis, mostly constituting more reconstruction projects and $1.2 billion for these programs. On May 1, 2007, Bush used his veto for only the second time in his presidency, rejecting a congressional bill setting a deadline for the withdrawal of U.S. troops. 5 years after the invasion, Bush called the debate over the conflict understandable, but insisted that a continued U.S. presence there was crucial. In March 2008, Bush praised the Iraqi government's bold decision to launch the Battle of Basra against the Mahdi army, calling it a defining moment in the history of a free Iraq. He said he would carefully weigh recommendations from his commanding general, David Petraeus, and Ambassador Ryan Crocker about how to proceed after the end of military build-up in the summer of 2008. He also praised the Iraqis' legislative achievements, including a pension law, a revised de-Ba'athification law, a new budget, an amnesty law, and a provincial powers measure that, he said, set the stage for the Iraqi elections. On July 31, 2006, Bush announced that with the end of July, American troop deaths had reached their lowest number, 13, since the war began in 2003. Due to increased stability in Iraq, Bush announced the withdrawal of additional American forces. This reflected an emerging consensus between the White House and the Pentagon that the war has turned a corner. He also described what he saw as the success of the 2007 troop surge. Surveillance. Following the events of September the 11th, Bush issued an executive order authorizing the president's surveillance program, which included allowing the NSA to monitor communications between suspected terrorists outside the U.S. and parties within the U.S. without obtaining a warrant as required by the Foreign Intelligence Service Act. As of 2009, the other provisions of the program remain highly classified. Once the Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel questioned its original legal opinion that FISA did not apply in a time of war, The program was subsequently reauthorized by the president on the basis that the warrant requirements of FISA were implicitly superseded by the subsequent passage of the authorization for use of military force against terrorists. The program proved to be controversial, as critics of the administration, as well as organizations such as the American Bar Association, argued that it was illegal. In August 2006, a U.S. District Court judge ruled that the NSA electronic surveillance program was unconstitutional, but on July 6, 2007, that ruling was vacated by the United States Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit on the grounds that the plaintiffs lacked standing. On the 17th of January 2007, General Alberto Gonzalez informed U.S. Senate leaders that the program would not be reauthorized by the president, but would be subjected to judicial oversight. Interrogation policies. Bush authorized the CIA to use waterboarding as one of several enhanced interrogation techniques. Between 2002 and 2003, the CIA considered certain enhanced interrogation techniques, such as waterboarding, to be legal based on a secret Justice Department legal opinion, arguing that terror detainees were not protected by the Geneva Convention's ban on torture. The CIA had exercised the technique on certain key terrorist suspects under authority given to it in the By Me memo from the Attorney General, though the memo was later withdrawn. While not permitted by the U.S. Army field manuals, which assert that harsh interrogation tactics elicit unreliable information, the Bush administration believed these enhanced interrogations provided critical information to preserve American lives. Such critics, such as former CIA officer Bob Beyer, have stated that information was suspect. You can get anyone to confess to anything if the torture is bad enough. On the 17th of October 2006, Bush signed into law the Military Commissions Act of 2006, a law enacted in the wake of the Supreme Court's decision in Hamden v. Rumsfeld, which allowed the U.S. government to prosecute unlawful enemy combatants by military commission rather than a standard trial. The law also denies them access to habeas corpus and bars torture of detainees, but allows the president to determine what constitutes torture. On March 8, 2008, Bush vetoed H.R. 2082, a bill that would have expanded congressional oversight over the intelligence community and banned the use of waterboarding, as well as other forms of interrogation not permitted under the United States Army Field Manual on Human Intelligence Collector Operations, saying that the bill Congress sent me would take away one of the most valuable tools in the war on terror. In April 2009, the ACLU sued and won release of the secret memos which had authorized the Bush administration's interrogation tactics. One memo detailed specific interrogation tactics, including a footnote that described waterboarding as torture, as well as that the form of waterboarding used by the CIA was far more intense than that authorized by the Justice Department. North Korea. Bush publicly condemned Kim Jong-il of North Korea, naming North Korea one of three states in an axis of evil, and saying that the United States of America will not permit the world's most dangerous regimes to threaten us with the world's most destructive weapons. Within months, both countries had walked away from their respective commitments under the U.S. DPRK agreed framework of October 1994. North Korea's October 9, 2006 detonation of a nuclear device further complicated Bush's foreign policy, which centered for both terms of his presidency on preventing the terrorists and regimes who seek chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons from threatening the United States and the world. Bush condemned North Korea's position, reaffirmed his commitment to a nuclear-free Korean peninsula, and stated that the transfer of nuclear weapons or materials by North Korea to states or non-state entities would be considered a grave threat to the United States, for which North Korea would be held accountable. On May 7, 2007, North Korea agreed to shut down its nuclear reactors immediately pending the release of frozen funds held in a foreign bank account. This was the result of a series of three-way talks initiated by the United States and including China. On the 2nd of September 2007, North Korea agreed to disclose and dismantle all of its nuclear programs by the end of 2007. By May 2009, North Korea had restarted its nuclear program and threatened to attack South Korea. Syria. Bush expanded economic sanctions on Syria. In early 2007, the Treasury Department, acting on a June 2005 executive order, froze American bank accounts of Syria's Higher Institute of Applied Science and Technology, Electronics Institute, and National Institute of Calibration Laboratory. Bush's order prohibits Americans from doing business with these institutions, suspected of helping spread weapons of mass destruction and being supportive of terrorism. Under separate executive orders signed by Bush in 2004 and later 2007, the Treasury Department froze the assets of two Lebanese and two Syrians, accusing them of activities to undermine the legitimate political process in Lebanon in November 2007. Those designated included Assad Halim Hardin, a member of Lebanon's parliament and current leader of the Syrian Socialist National Party, Y.M. Wahab, a former member of Lebanon's government, Minister of the Environment, under Prime Minister Omar Karami, 2004-2005, Hafiz Makhlouf, a colonel and senior official in the Syrian General Intelligence Directorate and cousin of Syrian President Bashir al-Assad, and Muhammad Nassif Kaibrick, identified as close advisor to Assad. Assassination attempt. On May 10, 2005, Vladimir Arutyunyan, a native Georgian who was born to a family of ethnic Armenians, threw a live hand grenade toward a podium where Bush was speaking at Freedom Square in Tbilisi, Georgia. Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili was seated nearby. It landed in the crowd, about 65 feet, 20 meters from the podium, after hitting a girl, but did not detonate. Arutyunyan was arrested in July 2005, confessed, and was convicted and given a life sentence in January 2006. Other issues. Bush withdrew U.S. support for several international agreements, including the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, ABM, with Russia. Bush emphasized a careful approach to the conflict between Israel and the Palestinians. He denounced Palestine Liberation Organization leader Yasser Arafat for his support of violence, but sponsored dialogues between Prime Minister Ariel Sharon and Palestinian National Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. Bush supported Sharon's unilateral disengagement plan and lauded the democratic elections held in Palestine after Arafat's death. Bush also expressed U.S. support for the defense of Taiwan following the standoff in April 2001 with the People's Republic of China over the Hainan Island incident, when an EP-3E Ares II surveillance aircraft collided with a People's Liberation Army Air Force jet, leading to the detention of U.S. personnel. In 2003-2004, Bush authorized U.S. military intervention in Haiti and Liberia to protect U.S. interests. Bush condemned the militia attacks Darfur and denounced the killings in Sudan as genocide. Bush said that an international peacekeeping presence was critical in Darfur, but opposed referring the situation to the International Criminal Court. In his State of the Union address in January 2003, Bush outlined a 5-year strategy for global emergency AIDS relief, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. Bush announced $15 billion for this effort, which directly supported life-saving antiretroviral treatment for more than 3.2 million men, women, and children worldwide. On June 10, 2007, he met with Albanian Prime Minister Sali Berisha and became the first president to visit Albania. Bush has voiced his support for the independence of Kosovo. Bush opened the Winter 2002 Olympics in Salt Lake City. Departing from previous practice, he stood among a group of U.S. athletes rather than from a ceremonial stand or box, saying, "On behalf of a proud, determined, and grateful nation, I declare open the Games of Salt Lake City, celebrating the Olympic Winter Games." In 2008, in the course of a goodwill trip to Asia, he attended the Summer Olympics in Beijing. Judicial appointments. Supreme Court. Following the announcement of Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor's retirement on July 1, 2005, Bush nominated John Roberts to succeed her. On September 5, following the death of Chief Justice William Rehnquist, the nomination was withdrawn and Bush instead nominated Roberts for Chief Justice to succeed Rehnquist. Roberts was confirmed by the Senate as the 17th Chief Justice on September 29, 2005. On October 3, 2005, Bush nominated White House counsel Harriet Myers for O'Connor's position. After facing significant opposition, she asked that her name be withdrawn on October 27th. 4 days later, on October 31st, Bush nominated federal appellate judge Samuel Alito for the position, and he was confirmed as the 110th Supreme Court Justice on January the 31st, 2006. Other courts. In addition to his two Supreme Court appointments, Bush appointed 61 judges to the United States Court of Appeals and 261 judges to the United States District Courts. Each of these numbers, along with his total of 324 judicial appointments, is third in American history, behind both Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton. Bush experienced a number of judicial appointment controversies, as 39 people nominated to 27 federal appellate judgeships were blocked by the Senate Democrats, either in the Senate Judiciary Committee or on the Senate floor using a filibuster. Public image and perception. Domestic image. Bush's upbringing in West Texas, his accent, his vacations on his Texas ranch, and his penchant for country metaphors contribute to his folksy American cowboy image. "I think people look at him like John Wayne," says Piers Morgan, editor of the British Daily Mirror. It has been suggested that Bush's accent was an active choice as a way of distinguishing himself from the northeastern intellectuals and anchoring himself to his Texas roots. Both supporters and detractors have pointed to his country persona as reasons for their support or criticism. Bush's intelligence has been satirized by the media, comedians, and other politicians. Detractors tended to cite linguistic errors made by Bush during his public speeches, which are colloquially termed as Bushisms. Editorials in Harper's Magazine, Rolling Stone, The Washington Post, Common Dreams News Center, and The Nation have referred to Bush as the worst president ever. In contrast to his father, who was perceived as having trouble with an overarching unifying theme, Bush embraced larger visions and was seen as a man of larger ideas and associated huge risks. Tony Blair wrote in 2010 that the character of Bush as being dumb is ludicrous, and that Bush is very smart. Approval. Bush's popularity was highly variable during his two terms. He began his presidency with approval ratings near 50%. After the September the 11th attacks, Bush gained an approval rating of 90%, maintaining 80-90% approval for 4 months after the attack. It remained over 50% most of his first term. In 2000, and again in 2004, Time magazine named George W. Bush as its Person of the Year, a title awarded to someone who the editors believe has done the most to influence the events of the year. In May 2004, Gallup reported that 89% of the Republican electorate approved of Bush. However, the support waned due mostly to a minority of Republicans' frustration with him on issues of spending, illegal immigration, and Middle Eastern affairs. Within the United States Armed Forces, according to an unscientific survey, the president was strongly supported in the 2004 presidential elections. While 73% of military personnel said that they would vote for Bush, 18% preferred his rival, John Kerry. According to Peter Feaver, a Duke University political scientist who has studied the political leanings of the U.S. military, members of the armed services supported Bush because they found him more likely than Kerry to complete the war in Iraq. Bush's approval rating went below the 50% mark in AP Ipsos polling in December 2004. Thereafter, his approval ratings and approval of his handling of domestic and foreign policy issues steadily dropped. Bush received heavy criticism for his handling of the Iraq War, his response to Hurricane Katrina, and to the Abu Ghraib prisoner abuse, NSA warrantless surveillance, the Plame affair, and Guantanamo Bay detention camp controversies. Polls conducted in 2006 showed an average of 37% approval ratings for Bush, the lowest of any second-term president at that point of his term since Harry S. Truman in March 1951, when Truman's rating was 28%, which contributed to what Bush called the thumping of the Republican Party in the 2006 midterm elections. Throughout 2007, Bush's approval rating hovered in the mid-30s, although in an October 17, 2007, Reuters poll, Bush received a lower approval rating of 24%, the lowest of his presidency. By April 2008, Bush's disapproval ratings were the highest ever recorded in the 70-year history of the Gallup poll for any president, with 69% of those polled disapproving of the job Bush was doing as president and 28% approving. In September 2008, in polls performed by various agencies, Bush's approval rating ranged from 19%, the lowest ever, to 34%, and his disapproval rating stood at 69%. Bush left the White House as one of the most unpopular American presidents, second in unpopularity only to Richard Nixon. In response to his poll numbers and worst president accusations, Bush said, "Frankly, I don't give a damn about the polls. To assume that historians can figure out the effect of the Bush administration before the Bush administration has ended is, in my mind, not an accurate reflection of how history works." In 2006, 744 professional historians surveyed by Siena College regarded Bush's presidency as follows: great, 2%, near great, 5%, average, 11%, below average, 24%, failure, 58%. Thomas Kelly, professor emeritus of American Studies at Siena College, said that, in this case, current public opinion polls actually seem to cut the president more slack than the experts do. Similar outcomes were retrieved by two informal surveys done by the History News Network in 2004 and 2008. A March 13, 2008 poll by Pew Research Center for the People and the Press reported that 53% of Americans believed that the U.S. will ultimately succeed in achieving its goals in Iraq. That figure was up from 42% in September 2007 and the highest since 2006. A 2010 Siena College poll of 238 presidential scholars found that Bush was ranked 39th out of 43, with poor ratings in handling of the economy, communication, ability to compromise, foreign policy accomplishments, and intelligence. Calls for Bush's impeachment were made, though most polls showed a plurality of Americans did not support the president's impeachment. The reasoning behind impeachment usually centered on the NSA warrantless surveillance controversy, the Bush administration's justifications for the war in Iraq, and alleged violations of the Geneva Conventions. Representative Dennis Kucinich, a Democrat from Ohio, introduced 35 articles of impeachment on the floor of the House of Representatives against Bush on June 9, 2008, but Speaker Nancy Pelosi declared that impeachment was off the table. Foreign perceptions. Bush has been criticized internationally and targeted by global anti-war and anti-globalization campaigns, partly for his administration's foreign policy. Views of him within the international community are more negative than previous American presidents, with France largely opposed to what he advocated. Bush was described as having especially close personal relationships with Tony Blair and Vincent Fox, although formal relations were sometimes strained. Other leaders, such as Afghan President Hamid Karzai, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, Spanish Prime Minister José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero, and Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, have openly criticized the president. Later in Bush's presidency, tensions arose between himself and Vladimir Putin, which has led to the cooling of their relationship. In 2006, a majority of respondents in 18 of 21 countries surveyed around the world were found to hold an unfavorable opinion of Bush. Respondents indicated that they judged his administration as negative for world security. In 2007, the Pew Global Attitudes Project reported that the Bush presidency, attitudes towards the United States, and the American people became less favorable around the world. A March 2007 survey of Arab opinion conducted by Zoghbi International and the University of Maryland found that Bush was the most disliked leader in the Arab world. The Pew Research Center's 2007 Global Attitudes poll found that out of 47 countries, a majority of respondents expressed a lot of confidence or some confidence in Bush in only 9 countries: Ethiopia, Ghana, India, Israel, Ivory Coast, Kenya, Mali, Nigeria, and Uganda. During a June 2007 visit to the predominantly Muslim Eastern European nation of Albania, Bush was greeted enthusiastically. Albania has a population of 3.6 million, has troops in both Iraq and Afghanistan, and the country's government is highly supportive of American foreign policy. A huge image of the president was hung in the middle of the capital city of Tirana, flanked by Albanian and American flags, while a local street was named after him. A shirt-sleeve statue of Bush was unveiled at the Fush Kruj, a few kilometers northwest of Tirana. The Bush administration's support of the independence of Albanian-majority Kosovo, whilst endearing him to the Albanians, has troubled U.S. relations with Serbia, leading to the February 2008 torching of the U.S. Embassy in Belgrade. Acknowledgements. On May 7, 2005, at an official state visit in Latvia, George W. Bush was awarded the Order of Three Stars, presented to him by President Vike Friberga. Post-presidency. Following the inauguration of Barack Obama, Bush and his family flew from Andrews Air Force Base to a homecoming celebration in Midland, Texas, following which they returned to their ranch in Crawford, Texas. They bought a home in the Preston Hollow neighborhood of Dallas, Texas, where they settled down. Since leaving office, Bush has kept a relatively low profile, though he has made public appearances, most notably after the release of his memoirs in 2010 and for the 10th anniversary of the September 11th attacks in 2011. He makes regular appearances at various events throughout the Dallas-Fort Worth area, most notably when he conducted the opening coin toss at the Dallas Cowboys' first game in the team's new stadium at Arlington, and an April 2009 visit to a Texas Rangers game where he thanked the people of Dallas for helping him settle in and was met by a standing ovation. In 2009, he delivered a speech in Calgary, Alberta, appeared via video on the Colbert Report, during which he praised U.S. troops for earning a special place in American history and attended the funeral of Senator Ted Kennedy. Bush made his debut as a motivational speaker on October the 26th at the Get Motivated seminar in Dallas. In the aftermath of the Fort Hood shooting that took place on November the 5th, 2009 in Texas, the Bushes paid an undisclosed visit to the survivors and victims' families the day following the shooting, having contacted the base commander, requesting that the visit be private and not involve press coverage. They spent 1 to 2 hours at the base. Bush released his memoirs, Decision Points, on November 9, 2010. During a pre-release appearance promoting the book, Bush said that he considered his biggest accomplishment to be keeping the country safe amid a real danger, and his greatest failure to be his inability to secure the passage of the Social Security reform. At President Obama's request, Bush and Bill Clinton established the Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund to raise contributions for relief and recovery efforts following the 2010 Haiti earthquake earlier in January. He also made news defending his administration's enhanced interrogation techniques, specifically the waterboarding of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, saying, "I'd do it again to save lives." He also attended every home playoff game for the Texas Rangers 2010 season and, accompanied by his father, threw out the ceremonial first pitch at Rangers Ballpark in Arlington for Game 4 of the 2010 World Series on October 31, 2010. In February 2011, Bush scrapped a planned visit to Switzerland amid threats of a protest at a speech he intended to give at a dinner in Geneva. Human rights groups have claimed the cancellation was due to fears of arrest by Swiss authorities, based on his acknowledgement that he ordered the waterboarding of detainees. Human rights groups, including the Center for Constitutional Rights, filed papers with the Swiss authorities, demanding his criminal prosecution pursuant to the Convention on Torture, an international treaty that requires authorities of all countries that have ratified the treaty to open an investigation of people suspected of torturing. On May 2, 2011, President Obama called Bush, who was at a restaurant with his wife, to inform him that Osama bin Laden had been killed. The Bushes joined the Obamas in New York City to mark the 10th anniversary of the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. At the Ground Zero Memorial, Bush read a letter that President Abraham Lincoln wrote to a widow who lost 5 sons during the Civil War.